All right.
Sorry, I did not mean to make the wake the little one up. I apologize. The chair calls the Education Finance Committee to order for Thursday, February 20th, 2025, and a quorum is noted. We do have a quorum. Representative Bakeberg, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, and I would move the minutes.
Representative Bakeberg moves the minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Motion carries. All right. Members, we have two bills today and a possible presentation, and I'm just going to take them on the order of the agenda. So, Representative Lawrence, if you could make your way to the testifier stand. Welcome, Representative Lawrence. And Representative Lawrence, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, good morning and thank you. Honored to come before the committee this morning. I would like to move House File 56 before the committee.
And House File 56 is in front of the committee with the intent to lay the bill over for possible inclusion into an omnibus bill or further consideration. Representative Lawrence, I believe you have an amendment.
I do.
Members, get the bill in the shape the author would like. Representative Lawrence, would you like to move the A1 amendment and explain it?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the A1 amendment.
And the A1 amendment is moved. Go to your amendment.
Technical?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't understand. Yeah, just a technical amendment, just a change of a couple words.
Nothing far-reaching? Nothing.
Nope.
Okay. Any discussion on the A1? All those in favor of the A1, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. All right, the bill, House File 56, as amended, is before us. Representative Lawrence, you have two testifiers.
Yes, I've brought two testifiers with me. Superintendent Ben Barton from Princeton School District and Superintendent Nate Rudolph from ISANTI Cambridge.
And Superintendent Barton and Superintendent Rudolph, if you'd like to come up. Representative Lawrence said you could do it in under 20 seconds each. So, no. Go ahead with your testimony, Al. I think we're okay on the time today, so as long as you can just be concise and to the point, that'd be appreciated. Which one of you would like to go first?
Mr. Chair, if I might interrupt for a minute.
Representative Lawrence.
Would this be the appropriate time to have nonpartisan staff give a recap of the bill before we testify?
We can certainly do that. Representative Lawrence, Mr. Strong, would you give an introduction to the bill?
Mr. Chair, members, House File 56 combines two programs into the Safe Schools Revenue Program, keeps the funding the same as it currently is, and essentially broadens the uses of the Safe Schools Revenue Program to encompass the uses of both that program and the Student Support Personnel Aid Program. In your packets is a printout. And that printout is organized in a manner that first shows the estimated pupil count for fiscal 26, then shows the base amount of Safe Schools levy that each district currently has. That's a levy authority for school districts only of $36 per pupil. And then those school districts, under current law, those school districts that are members of an intermediate district may levy an additional amount, and that's shown in the next column over that they need to pass on to the intermediate school districts. So the first per pupil column then shows the Safe Schools levy per pupil for each of the districts in the state. The next several columns show the Student Support Personnel Aid. That's an existing program and essentially under this bill would be added into the Safe Schools formula. The aid amounts are unchanged from current law, so school districts are getting a total of $48.73 per pupil unit for the program, and then there's an amount that goes to the cooperatives as well. Unlike some programs, the Student Support Personnel Aid Program has a minimum in it, and so as you look up and down the printout, you'll see that any district where the revenue would fall below $40,000, it receives at least that amount of revenue, and any charter school that falls below $20,000 would receive at least $20,000. So there is variation in the third to last column on the district support, student support pupil aid, Those districts that are small in pupil counts hit that minimum amount and have larger amounts per pupil of that. The last two columns show the district count as part of the co-op amount. That co-op amount is a bit different because that's actually a school district chooses which cooperative to give a portion of its co-op money to. And the Department of Education for the current law has a very nice spreadsheet on its website that allows one to look up the co-op amounts. But there are minimums built in that I could not capture on a district-by-district run. So in summary, Mr. Chair, the printout shows the existing two levels of funding that will stay unchanged in total but will be combined into one program, into the Safe Schools Revenue Program.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Lawrence, back to you.
Nope, I appreciate Governor staff for giving us the recap of the bill. Thank you very much. At this point in time, I think we're ready for our testifiers.
All right, let's go ahead with Superintendent Barton from Princeton. If you would state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Ben Barton, Superintendent of Princeton Public Schools. Thank you, Representative and Chair Kreisha and representatives and that are supporting our students and our schools. My name is Ben Barton. I'm the proud superintendent of Princeton Public Schools. We have the great honor to serve two cities and 12 townships and serve 3,300 K-12 students and an additional 500 students birth through four. I would like to thank Representative Lawrence for inviting us here to share a little bit about our school and the importance of school safety. And I also would like to thank Chair Kreisha for allowing us to pass out our legislative platform. Our goal in schools is for student learning, right? To prepare our students to thrive in an ever-changing world so that our students meet their potential as individuals and reach their hopes and their dreams so that they can contribute to our cities, our counties, our great state, and our country. Now, for student learning to occur, we need to use some common sense. And we know that there's some prerequisites for learning to occur. And that is, our students and our staff must feel like they are safe, they are respected, and like they belong, okay? And that's what this bill is all about. And over the years, I can tell you, and any educator would tell you without hesitation, that our roles have become more difficult and challenging as our students' safety needs have increased, and some of their mental health needs have increased as well. Our students have to be healthy. Our students need to be healthy physically and socially, emotionally, and mentally. Those are the conditions that need to be in place for optimal learning to occur. That's common sense, and this is what this bill is all about. As you know, we have two bills that are reflected that we're talking about, and this revision is to consolidate both bills. And I believe that the reason it is important to support this is it gives flexibility to school districts. Any school district will tell you, I think, that it is important to have local control and allow our local decision makers, local elected school board members, to make decisions related to where it's most important to spend dollars. Both of these funding streams are important to us. However, sometimes at least the one newest funding stream, the student support personnel, comes with lots of restrictions, okay, and doesn't allow us some flexibility. And I'd like to give you just one easy example for you to understand this. About, I think it was 2 years ago or so, our district, and I think many were given an additional $40,000, right? But for us to spend those dollars, there were strings attached. And we could use those for things like school nursing, school social workers, and school counselors, okay? But the restrictions were pretty limiting in the fact, and I'm going to use school nursing as an example. For us to use those dollars, it could only be used for a licensed school nurse. A licensed school nurse, also referred to as an LSN, you need to have a four-year RN degree, plus additional licensure and certification in school nursing. Okay, those are difficult to find. We're lucky in Princeton we can find those, but I would venture to guess that in outstate Minnesota it would be nearly impossible. So if a school district had that need for additional nursing, right, they could not likely use that $40,000 to fund that needed nurse because they, for one, they would not be able to find a licensed LSN, right, where they may be able to just get by with an LPN or a CNA. And for those of you familiar with the nursing system, you know that there's different kind of certifications. Of course, a CNA and LPN, a district would, one, be more easily to find that position, and two, it would be less expensive. Here's another example. For us, and I'm going to stay along the lines with this school nursing piece, and I'm going to tell you why here in a moment. For us to get that LSN, that's going to be about $100,000 total package, okay? And in our district, in Princeton, and as you can see in our platform, on our, every year that I've been there in the last 7 years, we've had about a $2 to $3 million shortfall, meaning that we are trying to cut about $1 to $2 million every year. So for me to get to utilize that $40,000 for a licensed school nurse, I would have to spend $100,000, right? And total package for me, that would be a negative $60,000, which is very difficult for me to justify when we are in cutting mode and cutting $1 million. Whereas we could probably have gotten by with a LPN or a CNA to meet some of the needs that we have. Those are just some of the kind of rigid requirements that came with that money. And also there was the fear of if you couldn't use that money or didn't use that money, you had to send it back to the state. And many districts had to do that. So what we are asking for is for your support to support this bill to allow just more flexibility, to allow local decision makers to make decisions that's best and most appropriate for their specific district. And just one last piece, because I wanted to follow up on the school nursing piece, and this is hugely important. Our school district, 3,300 students, we've had about the same population of students for the last, well, 10 years around that I've been there, okay? But, and I've also told you that we've had to cut staff every single year, except for one area, school nursing. Why? The number and percentages of our students that have acute medical needs have increased, okay? And we believe that because of the advancement in medicine, the beautiful thing is that more people are surviving birth, which is awesome, right? But that means that there are additional long-standing complications that go with them into adulthood. And as public educators, we have the great privilege to educate everyone, each and all, no matter what, no matter if they have a disability or a health condition or anything. And therefore, though that's just one example of why we've had to increase nursing staff because of the sophistication of the nursing needs and the acuity of care that needs to happen. So with that, I would entertain any questions, and again, thank you very much.
And thank you, Superintendent Barton. I appreciate your testimony. I would like to make one note. The chair takes great exception of using common sense as a standard down here.
Okay. I think that's a joke.
You can take that for what it's worth. Superintendent Rudolph, you're up.
Thank you, Chair Krisha, members of the committee. I would just like to echo Superintendent Barton's message around flexibility. That is the largest gain out of this bill as we see it. We experience exactly the same situations. Limited and restricted dollars that can only be used in certain capacities. I serve Cambridge Isani School District. We serve about 5,000 students. Primarily the communities of Cambridge and Isanti, and 12 townships, I believe we have all together. I wrote some remarks here to keep me on track, and just want to note that we did have some questions and some concerns about the ongoing dollars and revenue tied to this, all of which I believe have been clarified for us. That said, it was the bill at this point had some unclearness for us when we read it as a school district initially that caused us those questions. So I'm going to read my remarks with those. I believe the bill is as it's written to continue with the funding as we hope it would, but it would just maybe call for some additional clarity with it. So we're very, very appreciative. So thank you again for the opportunity to testify regarding House File 56. My name is Nate Rudolph. I serve as superintendent of Cambridge Isani Schools. Our district is committed to providing safe and supportive learning environments for all students. And we greatly appreciate the legislature's efforts to enhance school safety through this bill. We're strong proponents of gaining flexibility in how we can allocate restricted funds. The ability to direct resources based on our district's unique needs allows us to address specific challenges more effectively. We believe that this bill does just that. However, we do have some concerns regarding the repeal of the existing student support personnel aid as outlined in the current Minnesota statute. This program currently provides important funding that has enabled us to hire support staff who directly contribute to the well-being and success of our students. But please note, as Superintendent Barton said, that we currently have difficulty with the use of student support personnel aid because of its restrictiveness. Our primary concern is that the repeal of the student support personnel aid for our district may receive less total funding than currently allocated under existing law. This includes not only current funding allocations, but also future allocations. Any restriction in funding for schools at this time could significantly impact our ability to maintain important services for our students. Given that Cambridge Isani Schools already ranks in the bottom one-third percent of per pupil spending in Minnesota, any decrease in funding would likely exacerbate existing challenges and hinder our efforts to provide quality education and support for our students. We don't believe that that's the intent of this law. We respectfully request that as a committee considers House File 56 provisions be included to ensure that districts do not experience a net loss in funding now or into the future due to the repeal of student support personnel aid. Maintaining or increasing our current funding levels is essential to continuing to offer the necessary services and programming that our students rely on. In conclusion, while the support and intent of House File 56 to enhance school safety and provide funding flexibility, it's crucial that these changes do not come at the expense of existing support services. We would encourage the committee to consider slight adjustments to the bill that bring clarification on that matter, and really, really thank the committee and Representative Lawrence for thinking about ways to increase the safety and security of our school districts and to provide us additional flexibility with revenue.
Very good. Thank you, Superintendent Rudolph. And so at this time, I'd ask the two testifiers, Superintendent Barton and Superintendent Rudolph, if you could have a seat back. We'll bring the other testifiers up. Appreciate your testimony. And with that, public testimony, we'll do this in pairs again. Caitlin Schneider from Education Minnesota, and Suhana, Edina student, 10th grade. And Suhana, if you want to state your last name, I'll leave that up to you. And Suhana, it's the policy that we like to follow that if you're a minor, we don't share the last name. So I'll leave that up to you. And I'll begin with Ms. Schneider.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Caitlin Snyder. I use she, her pronouns, and today I'm representing Education Minnesota. 84,000 strong across the state, about 600 educators in every house district. Once upon a time, the motto of this committee was fund what works. To do that, we need data. When you look at how the current $40 million for state schools revenue is used, about $14 million goes to contractors, and about $8 million goes to what I'm going to call stuff. Buses, software, bulletproof windows, stuff that a school needs to run. Contractors help fill gaps in our schools, and schools certainly need stuff. But data tells us that there are two key predictors of academic success: stable housing and one strong relationship with someone in the school. Who in a school helps a student if they need assistance finding housing? School social workers. Not the software, not the bus, not a door, a school social worker. And who provides strong relationships? The people in the building. The school social workers with housing, the school counselors helping with interpersonal skills, the school psychologists getting kids the proper special education services they deserve, and our school nurse, which might be the only healthcare professional our students have access to. This bill defunds the two strongest predictors of academic success. What's more, this bill is incredibly unpopular with Minnesotan parents. 83% of parents in Minnesota of public school students approved of providing more mental health services for our kids in schools. If you look at the data, you'll see the vast majority of school districts have spent their student support personnel aid. It works. And if you look at the data, you will see all of our neighboring states have a better student-to-counselor ratio or student-to-nurse ratio, student-to-psychologist, student-to-social worker, all of our neighboring states. We are providing less to our kids than Iowa, and it is because of the choices that Minnesota school administrators are making under the current system. I urge the committee to side with 83% of Minnesota parents. Do not defund mental health services and licensed personnel in your district. Support our students. Follow the data. Follow what works.
Thank you, Ms. Schneider. Sue Hanna, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Sue Hanna, and I'm really grateful that I got the opportunity to talk about this today because mental health is really important to me and all of my peers in high school. One of the things that's especially important to me is, again, feeling the connection with some of the support staff at my school, including help with colleges and just help being a high schooler in general. And I think it's really helpful having different types of support staff as well, from counselors to social workers, because they really help me focus on my studies while I know someone at school has my back. And I think it's really important for all students to feel that way. And that's why I'm so passionate about mental health, especially in high school. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And if I could call up Regina from Edina and Hannah as well from Edina. And we'll start with you, Regina, and again, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony, and then Hannah to follow.
Hi, my name is Regina, and I'm really grateful to be here today because mental health is a very, very important part for me. Minnesota students are currently facing a growing mental health crisis. Anxiety, depression, and suicide rates among young people are rising drastically. And schools are often the first and sometimes the only place for some students where students can access mental health support that they need. That's why Student Support Personnel Aid has been essential. It has funded school counselors, social workers, and psychologists, all of whom provide life-changing, but mostly life-saving support for students. However, this bill repeals that dedicated funding and shifts resources towards school security under Safe Schools Aid. While physical safety is important, we cannot ignore that mental health is also a core part of school safety. Counselors and mental health professionals help prevent crises before they happen. Without this funding, schools may be forced to cut these positions, leaving students without access to the essential help that they need. This bill does not require schools to invest in mental health support. It only allows it as an option, and without a dedicated investment, many districts will not have the resources to prioritize student mental health. As someone who has had multiple family members attempt to take their own life and end up in multiple psychiatric hospitals, not just once, but multiple times, I can tell you firsthand that mental health support goes beyond help with daily struggles. It's a matter of literal life and death for many people. Without my family resources, my family receiving the mental health resources they did, many of which were in school, they would likely not be alive right now. And it's heartbreaking to me that this bill could potentially stop other in-need students of receiving the essential support that they need to keep them alive. And I urge you to protect and expand mental health funding, not eliminate it, and we need more. Counselors, social workers, and mental health education, not less. And Minnesota deserves to feel safe, supported, and understood, not just physically, but emotionally and mentally as well. And thank you so much for your time, and I strongly encourage you to keep mental health a priority in schools because your decision could save a life, like my brother. So thank you so much for your time.
And Regina, thank you for your testimony and your honest sharing of your stories. Appreciate that. Hannah.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Hannah Hein. I'm a junior at Edina High School. And if my first 3 years in high school have taught me two things about education and how it relates to safety, it's these two things. First, that safety and especially mental security in high school is critically important to feeling accepted and learning through your high school experience. And second, that mental health doesn't exist in just a vacuum. It requires a strong link between all members of the community and between crucial members of the high school administration and support. So I'd urge you to pass legislation that only supports our students and that allows them to achieve everything they want in high school by bolstering this mental health support system. So one example of this at the district level that's critical in Edina is the Fraser Health Therapists. This is a critical partnership that Edina has invested in that has allowed us to have more mental health personnel within the school. But when we leave this up to the schools, it ensures that schools that have less access to resources than schools like Edina High School aren't able to create that connection between students their community, and their mental health professionals. So I strongly sympathize with the authors of this legislation, and I would urge you to ensure that whenever we're cutting any aspect of the funding from the state, that we ensure that there are other places where this funding can come from. So to make sure that you only legislate in ways that support our students at all levels of this process, so that their mental health professionals and these partnerships with schools can be secured, I'd urge you to look at that aspect of this legislation that cuts the school personnel funding and ensure that you go with the author's intentions to support mental health and safety across all schools in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Would like Solveig with the Minnesota Youth Council and Sami, and I'll let you pronounce your last name.
How are you? Doing wonderful, thank you. Thank you.
Okay, let's begin with Solveig.
Hi there. Thank you to the committee and Chairperson Kresha for having me here today. My name is Solveig Graf, and I'm a first-year student at St. Olaf College studying public health. Before that, I spent a year as a child care worker. I present before you today as a committee member and implore you to reject House File 56. Mental health care is not optional for today's youth. I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety before I entered middle school and struggled with depression throughout high school. I know how lost I once felt and what it is like to lose a friend to mental illness. I know what it is like to live days afraid of one's own thoughts and otherwise burdened by the weight of your own emotions. But I also know what it's like to be free of that. Today, I live without chronic depression. I am happier and healthier than ever. Why? Mainly because I've been the benefactor of mental health resources and professional help. Throughout my education, I did have access to free in-school mental health resources. I remember every one of my counselors and ever grateful in their role in my development. They provided care in times of immediate need and provided tools to work through ongoing challenges. I now find myself well-equipped to navigate the social and emotional tests that come in the earliest years of my adult life. But I shouldn't have to describe this as a privilege. As an OLE at St. Olaf College, I have engaged in open discussions from peers from all across the state of Minnesota who have been in need of help in some time during their K-12 education and didn't receive in a timely manner. Needless to say, diverting funds is not going to improve that. That can't stand. In a world where youth face mounting pressures from social media, heightened anxiety around their futures, and on top of all the typical challenges that all of us ought to remember from our own young days, support now is needed now more than ever. The state cannot afford to have its youth, the future of our society, and indeed the state economy, grow up with mental illness that is unassisted. Mental health care is preventative care and is proactive care. Protect our young now and support a happier and healthier future for Minnesota. If you want to know what your constituents want, listen to me and those who have already spoken before me today. The kids in our schools speak in favor of mental health care, not against. Please, I ask you to vote against House File 56.
Thank you for your testimony. Sami, did I pronounce that right?
Yes, you did. Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Kresha, Representative Lawrence, and members of the committee. My name is Sami Rojab, Assistant Director of Government Relations with the Minnesota Department of Education, and I appreciate the opportunity today to provide thoughts and feedback on House File 56. While Safe School Aid is an important stream focused on a safe teaching and learning environment for students and educators, I want to highlight that how we achieve these safe learning environments should not be at the cost of our schools also having the student support personnel that help our students with their mental and physical health needs. Student Support Personnel Aid was created as a targeted stream to address a serious deficit in staff that are critical to ensuring student well-being, and as we know, student well-being is critical to academic success. In this proposal, I would like to raise the concern that the funding for Student Support Personnel Aid has been allocated to districts over the last 2 years, and just last session we passed into law allowing for fund balance of aid entitlement. By removing this fund balance, or this funding, there is a possible loss of staff whose districts have begun to depend on this funding to maintain those personnel and could put the financial responsibility to maintain that staff back onto the districts or losing those positions. Additional technical concerns we have with this legislation are the mechanisms of funding and negative impacts that could be created should this proposal move forward. We have concerns on the lack of clarity on the in the proposal on what would happen to unspent carryover funds for districts from fiscal year 2024. Second, the allocation of funds to cooperatives in Section 2 may create validation issues at the agency level and could have expanded confusion at local levels, resulting in inaccurate reporting. And although minor, this will create an additional minute and MDE cost for coding and updating systems to change student support personnel aid to safe school aid. I would also like to remind the committee that the governor is proposing a modification to the current student support personnel aid distribution for cooperatives to alleviate the current inequitable and inefficient model that we've heard feedback from districts and cooperatives. I appreciate the time of the committee today and hope to offer continued feedback on this proposal should this legislation move forward. Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony. And with that, members, I do have five remote testifiers. And so we're going to, if you'll extend some grace to us as we try to navigate our way through this. Megan Rise from Rochester Public Schools.
Oh, am I going now? Okay, it's Megan Reyes.
Reyes? I'm sorry, yeah. Ms. Reyes, and you are live, and we can hear you.
Thank you. As I was introduced, I'm Megan Reyes, elementary school counselor here in Rochester Public Schools, and a mom to almost a soon kindergartner. So here we go. Good afternoon. As a school counselor, I'm here to express my concern about House File 56 and its potential impact on our students' well-being. While ensuring the safety of our schools is undeniably important, we must not lose sight of the fact that mental health support is equally crucial for the long-term success of our students. House File 56 proposes that funding currently used for mental health resources be redirected to school safety measures. While school safety should always be a priority, we cannot ignore the growing mental health crisis affecting our young people. Students are facing unprecedented levels of stress, anxiety, depression, and trauma. In my role as a counselor, I witnessed firsthand how these challenges affect their ability to learn, engage, and thrive in school, especially at the elementary level. At that elementary level, there's a few reasons why House File 56 could be a negative change. One would be early intervention for emotional needs. At the elementary level, children are still developing the tools to cope with their emotions. Redirecting funding away from mental health resources means losing critical programs that teach kids how to identify and manage their feelings. Without these programs, students are struggling with anxiety, sadness, or trauma, may not receive the help they need early on, which could lead to bigger issues down the road as they grow older. Number two is increased behavioral problems. Elementary age children are still learning how to interact with others and manage conflicts. When mental health resources are cut, there will be fewer opportunities for students to receive guidance on how to navigate difficult social situations. Without support, small issues like a disagreement with a classmate or difficulty adjusting to school life can quickly escalate into behavioral problems without proper counseling and emotional support. The school environment could become less safe and more disruptive. For example, I just had this recently where a student just moved here. Her needs were unmet and she escalated her behaviors drastically. With the emotional supports and proper counseling that I've been able to provide, it has now become a whole different person. She is a leader. She is de-escalating disagreements amongst peers. She's advocating for things to be changed in our school. Trauma-informed care. Many students at elementary level come from backgrounds where they're experienced trauma, whether it's domestic violence, food insecurity, or other adverse circumstances. And us mental health professionals are trained in trauma-informed care are essential in helping these children process their experiences and understand their emotions in a healthy way. It is especially important because there's a continuous wait list for outside providers at such young of age. Number four is a crisis prevention. Many behavioral issues or violent tendencies in schools don't arise suddenly. They're often a result of unmet emotional or mental health needs that build up over time. When children aren't given proper outlets to express their emotions or receive earlier an intervention for mental health struggles, we see a spike in their behavioral crisis. Mental health counselors work with students to address these underlying issues before they escalate. And five, increases the stress and anxiety. We have noticed that in elementary school age children, they're navigating a world filled with pressure, both academically and socially. Without adequate mental health resources, children may not learn how to manage school stress or social pressures in a healthy way. This can lead to anxiety, depression, physical health issues, such as stomach aches or headaches. Reducing our support for mental health can only increase that stress. We've seen such a drastic increase of people going down to the nurse's office that I work with those students after the nurse referrals, and we work on those stressors with those students. So by redirecting funds away from mental health programs, we risk exacerbating these issues and creating an environment where students are not receiving the full support they need to grow and succeed, both academically and emotionally. So it's why it's essential that we continue to prioritize mental health in our schools, especially at the elementary level. I urge lawmakers to reconsider House File 56 and prioritize the mental health needs of our students alongside safety. We must invest in the whole child, their safety, their emotional well-being, and their future. And like I said, as it has been brought up, elementary is often forgotten, and we need to have more supports put in place for us, for the younger children. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Sydney from the Minnesota School Counselors Association, and if you pronounce your last name, that would be helpful to me. Sydney.
Can you see me?
Are you there? I saw a picture, but...
Hello?
I'm going to come to, let's go to Abby, and then we'll come back to you, Sydney. So Abby Refflin, I'm going to let you pronounce that one. Abby.
A lot of consonants. Good afternoon, Chair Krisha and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Abby Refflin. I am a licensed independent clinical school social worker, member of the Minnesota School Social Work Association Board of Directors, and serve as a director of Agate Social Works. School social workers play a vital role in fostering student success through prevention, intervention, and lifelong skill development. We ensure that students receive the mental health support that they need. We have appreciated the school support personnel investment. Minnesota is making progress toward reducing caseload so we can better meet the mental health needs of our students. School social workers, many of whom are clinically trained mental health professionals, provide crisis intervention, behavioral support, and trauma-informed care. This is fundamentally different from the role of school resource officers. Merging funding for these distinct roles will reduce access to critical mental health services. Maintaining dedicated funding for school social workers and other student support personnel is essential to ensuring both mental health and safety needs are met. Research confirms schools with strong school-based mental health support experience better academic outcomes, improved attendance, and reduced disciplinary issues, including lower rates of violence. School social workers implement evidence-based interventions such as restorative practices and conflict resolution strategies that proactively address student needs and teach personal responsibility. For example, I facilitate regular restorative circles at a school to address bullying and peer conflicts. This type of intervention has transformed our school community, decreasing behavior referrals due to increased social skill development and enhanced communication skills. With student mental health concerns at an all-time high, Minnesota cannot afford to divert funds away from professional, school-based mental health services. By protecting dedicated funding for the student support personnel like school social workers, Minnesota can continue to make progress in providing essential social and emotional resources so that our students can thrive. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Nadine. Nadine, remote would be our next testifier. I'm going to come back. Let's go to Katie. All right. Let's go back to Sydney. So Katie's not on. Sydney, would you like round, like round, like round? Sydney, let's try Sydney. There you are. Sydney, we see you. All right. Let's go one more time to Nadine. Okay, members. I'm going to go ahead and close the remote testifiers.
Katie, I'm right here.
Katie?
Yep. So I'm Katie. I'm actually Catherine Heisel. Thank you Catherine. For having me today.
Just one second. Okay, members. Catherine, you may begin.
Thank you for having me today, committee members and Chair Krisha. My name is Catherine or Katie Heisel. I'm a licensed independent clinical social worker, a member of the Minnesota School Social Worker Association, and a school social worker here in St. Paul Public Schools. I've worked in elementary schools and I'm currently in a federal level 4 high school. Additionally, I also speak to you today as a mother of 2 adopted teenagers from the foster care system who greatly benefit from mental health services in our schools. School social workers provide culturally responsive support reducing suspensions and improving educational outcomes. Schools with strong mental health services see fewer behavioral issues because students receive proactive support rather than reactive discipline. Studies confirm that students with greater access to mental health services are less likely to engage in disruptive behavior, meaning schools become safer. From homelessness, lack of shelter options, food insecurity, kids sleeping on floors, family discord, drugs and violence in the community, our schools are sometimes the only place that students feel safe or have a single trusted adult to connect to about their mental health. School social workers have systems trainings and are often the go-to resource person for an entire school. That means that even if a student isn't on a social worker's caseload, the teachers often reach out for help with resources for multiple students. The level of need is daunting. We need commitment to existing dedicated funding for social workers, mental health services, and other support professionals, not a repeal of important work already completed. As a single mother who is a mental health professional in the school system, I wish I could say that I have everything figured out, but I am reliant on and beyond grateful for the mental health teams at my kids' schools. The level of behavioral and mental health concerns are too much for me alone, and like so many of our family members who are families and students who are struggling. I'm requesting your commitment to dedicated funding for mental health school support personnel. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Heisel. Imagine my surprise when I thought you were remote and I turned over here and suddenly you're there. So that is impressive. Mr. Barton and Mr. Rudolph, if you'd like to come back to the test fire stand, we're going to move to member questions, and this is the opportunity, members, for you to ask questions of testifiers and the bill author. Remember, the intention is to lay this bill over, and so if it's a conversation you could have in the hallway with a cup of coffee, please do that. If it's a question that we'd like to get on the record, let's do that. The first person I have is Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for Representative Lawrence. So I've got the bill language in front of me, Representative Lawrence, and I heard a lot about cuts, funding cuts, or cuts to mental health, school social workers. I'm not seeing it in here. Can you point that out? Because I'm a little bit confused.
And Representative Bennett, was that for the well, I'll let you decide, Representative Lawrence or your testifiers.
No, Representative Lawrence. Well, unless he wants to. Yeah.
Representative Lawrence or your testifiers, whoever would like to take that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett, I'd be happy to answer. I think, and I think the biggest reason at the beginning of our testimony, I had asked nonpartisan staff Tim Strom to do the introduction of the bill, and in his presentation of the bill, he was very clear and said, "We are not cutting any funds here. There are no revenues that are being cut. All the revenues are going to be the same. They're just going to be transferred in, I'm going to say, married together into one bill." And so and that was a big concern. We brought Nate Rudolph, superintendent. Him and I had that conversation this morning and talked fairly in depth. And to him, we ran down that question very specifically because he had concern about his district winding up in a net loss. And we were able to conclude with the work of our nonpartisan staff that there are no net losses for districts. The dollars are the same. There are no cuts being proposed with this legislation. All the monies that schools are getting today will be the same in the future with the increases that we as a legislature would provide for those. So thank you for that question. And declare there are no funding reductions.
And Mr. Strom, just to make sure we have the precision of your words, do you want to add to that at all?
Mr. Chair, no, I think that's sanctioned on the revenue side.
Very good. Representative Quam. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Bennett,
just
follow
up. Quick follow-up. Thank you. And just want to say I appreciate that. I think mental health is hugely important. School social workers, very important. I think our districts believe that, too, and they will utilize this funding appropriately. It kind of mischaracterizes, I believe, our schools to say they're suddenly going to cut mental health and so on. They know how important it is, and those are the things they want to keep moving. So I appreciate the flexibility in this bill and that it does not cut any funds and allows schools to continue with their mental health work, which mental health professionals, school social workers, and so on. So thank you for that flexibility, and thank you for not cutting these funds. They're important.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I liked how they used the words net, no net loss or cut. almost every school district in my area, the last session's bill was a net budget cut of millions of dollars. And that's caused a lot of problems. When I was on the Zed Governing Board, where several school districts got together to work for special ed, mental health, and other programs, the first thing I learned was that the federal dollars were very compartmentalized. And the most useful thing was flexibility in the state funds, because as the years, you know, from year to year, the needs at a school change, and students are individuals, and there's a difference. So if this bill is in effect, just saying you've got more flexibility to what you're going to use the dollars on, that was what was very important to the Zumbro Education District and the several schools that joined together with that to provide for the individual students that needed special or different care. So thank you for this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Hudson, then Representative Ream. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lawrence, for bringing this bill. It sounds like we're kind of continuing the premise of the conversation that we had on Tuesday regarding HF6, which is whether or not we can trust. It wasn't stated this way, but that certainly was the implication of the premise that was articulated by testifiers and members, whether or not we can trust local school boards, local school administrators to actually have their students, their teachers, their parents, their community in mind when they make decisions. I think we can, and I think we should. The idea, the presumption that by not cutting, not reallocating at the state level, but by deferring to the wisdom of those who are on the ground actually doing the work to decide how they're going to prioritize the dollars that we send them in order to educate their kids, what we're doing is we're saying we actually want this to work. We're talking about funding what works. What works is people who have eyes on the ground making decisions about how things should work and trusting that they have goodwill, good faith, good intentions, unless we have cause to believe otherwise. And I think kind of the fundamental mistake, this is my first term on Ed Finance, what I see at the surface level is a fundamental mistake that has been made in the past with all of these silos of dedicated funding for particular purposes. So it makes things very easy for us here in St. Paul to say, we did it, guys. High five. We solved the problem. We provided dedicated funding for X, Y, or Z. Nothing else to do. Job accomplished, mission accomplished. But when it actually trickles down to where it matters, at the school district, in the school board, in the schools themselves, with the students, we're seeing all kinds of tensions that are reflected not just by the testimony that I've heard from your witnesses today, your superintendents that you've brought, Representative Lawrence, but by literally every administrator and superintendent that I've talked to, including a whole group of folks, including my own STMA superintendent that were here Tuesday that we spoke to, some of us spoke to on the floor and in the alcove after our Ed Finance hearing that day. And they're all echoing the same thing. They can't understand why we here in St. Paul won't trust them to make decisions for themselves and their communities. I think it's high time that we provided this flexibility. Your bill does that, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hudson. Representative Ream.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative Lawrence.
Just comment on that. And I just want to give a real shout out to the colleagues that are on my right and my left here. I asked these gentlemen, I hope you heard in their testimony today, but I've had a chance to visit with them extensively. We've had several different meetings over time here. And yes, they're in my district, but one of the biggest reasons I asked them to testify today is because of their passion for the students they serve. And I hope you heard that in their testimony. If we had time, I'd let them go on. But and I hear this throughout superintendents I talk to all over. But in particular, these two gentlemen right here, they have a true passion for the students that they're serving in their district. They want the best. They want to be able to use the funds to best serve the students that they serve. And they have a true passion, a true desire to do what's best for the students that are in their districts.
Thank you, Representative Lawrence. Yep. Representative Ream.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Lawrence, for bringing this bill forward. I much prefer this bill to HF6, I will say. And I think this is a great bill, a great conversation starter when we're looking at trying to address the need for flexibility in our schools. I think that's really good. I am concerned, however, about diverting any funds from support personnel. You know, I think we've heard from the students here and others that, you know, we're facing a mental health crisis. You know, COVID has only exacerbated the issues that we are seeing in our schools. Absenteeism is also another huge issue. So I think we need more funding for counselors and our support staff, more funding, not less funding. And my concern is that by diverting it to, you know, security measures, to cybersecurity, that we take away from that really important funding that we have. And so that, I guess, is my main concern. I want to also put a shout out to everyone who's here for Mental Health Day on the Hill. It's a great day to think about and be aware of all the mental health issues we're facing, reduce the stigma. And I guess my question to you would be, Representative Lawrence, you know, is it possible for someone with the way the legislation is written right now, is it possible for a school to use the money for cybersecurity and physical security in a way that would reduce the money that would be used for support personnel? Because to me, it seems like that would be one of my biggest concerns.
And Representative Lawrence, you can take that, or you can ask Mr. Strom to clarify either one.
Mr. Chair, if I might do two parts there, maybe I'll defer to Mr. Strom as well for the clarification part. And then I think I'd like to hear how superintendents may intend to answer that question. They're the gentlemen there in the field. That's why they're here today, and how those dollars would be funded. The one comment I would like to make, Mr. Chair and Representative, is as you read the bill, the mandate of how the dollars are to be spent within those areas that were clarified in the previous years is the same. And so the mental health is still listed in there. The security officers are still listed in there. All those different pieces that were previous there for the money to be spent on are still there. And then, Mr. Chair, if Mr. Trump would like to comment, and then I'd like to come back to the superintendent and say how they would deal with that question.
And I think, Representative Lawrence, let's go ahead. Rather than talking past the two testifiers, let's talk to them. Okay. Either superintendent, go ahead.
You mind if I go?
Go right ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I've just been chopping at the bit to talk here. You know, it was my understanding when I was asked to testify that there would be no loss of funding, right? And if I felt that was the case, there's no way I would have been able to come here to support this, right? Because we need way, way more, okay? The reality is, in our district, I can just give you practicality, okay? We need an extra counselor at each of our five buildings. We need a social worker at each of our five buildings, and we need more nurses. As I understand it, the student support personnel could be used for those types of things, right? That's like $1 million. Let's be practical here. We receive $40,000, right? So we can maybe use those dollars to subsidize one potential position, and no way would we be able to use those dollars to fully pay for an additional position. And as it's written now, I believe it only can be used for a new non-existing position, right? And as I mentioned to you before, in districts, many of which, like me, are cutting every year $1 million, that really, when you look only at the budget to add that position, that's about a $60,000 difference to the negative, right? I support 100% all of the testifiers here today. The needs are greater than ever. We are an organization of student learning, but the conditions for learning must be in place. And any of you, we invite you to walk through any of our schools at any time to see the realities of what's happening, because we have to put so much time and effort into our students being regulated and feeling safe, respected, and like they belong, so that the conditions for learning are there so that we can optimize what we do, right? And the challenges are great, Our teachers, and I appreciated the elementary testimony. You go into our primary school, our kindergarten, our first grade, and second graders, there's not one day that goes by, and I'm sorry I can't sugarcoat this, that one or two of them are not assaulted or hurt. And the dysregulation is real, right? And we have such huge needs. We need way, way more. But you hear that from everybody, right? But the practicality of this is we get $40,000. And right now, the way it's written is that we don't have the flexibility to do what we can do to be practical within our district. And as I understand how the bill is written, is it doesn't take away money, but it allows us the flexibility to do that. Going back to the reality of our school district, the Safe Schools money, that portion of it, yes, we have used that to support an SRO. Because when you take a look at the Maslow hierarchy of need, students need to be feel safe. And unfortunately, the reality is, we have to be fearful that someone's going to come in and shoot and kill us. And that's not okay. So we do need to spend resources on things to help in that area. But we also recognize that the mental health, the social emotional needs are hugely important so that our students can learn. So that's where that $40,000 of additional dollars that we can have to add additional support, we're just asking for that flexibility. So I sympathize and I agree with all the testifiers, 110%. We are here to develop human beings, and there's a lot of challenges. So I thank you for the opportunity to provide some clarification.
And thank you for that. Representative Lawrence, did you want your other testifier to weigh in?
He would like to.
I do. I'm chomping
at the bit. Mr. Rudolph.
So, Chair Kreisha, thank you. And what a great conversation. And first, before I go on, I just want to single out and raise up our student leaders who stood before you today and shared their voice. How powerful. Democracy is alive because of your testimony, because of your courage to come up and talk to us as adults and share your experience. So kudos to you. I'm super proud and thank you for showing up today. I would once again echo Superintendent Barton's comments. Really, what this comes down to for school district administrators is that some of the money and the spirit of the funding that goes with school personnel aid is absolutely spot on. The problem is with the restrictions that come with it, we can't always use that money. We can't always unlock that money for the purpose that it's needed. So I appreciated Representative Hudson's comments about trusting and being able to use resources as we see needed and as we see fit with what our students are struggling with on a day-to-day basis. And that in no means is it diverting funds from one pocket to the other. It's unlocking funds for us. It allows us to access those funds. And if we can access those funds and maybe use those different and save in another pocket of money or another pool of money, then we can use that resource a different way. And now we have access to the dollars differently. So it really is just a management of how do we get and maximize the most amount of funding that we possibly can, because we don't get enough and we need more. And so that's really what our testimony is about.
And thank you to that, to the two superintendents for the testifiers. I think, members, what we're seeing is, you're heard. We understand the more resources argument, and that comes, and people around this table would like to have that conversation, so here we go. But I think what you're doing today, and to the students and the testifiers, is you're giving us the ability to raise above a binary options and to say, let's look for solutions, and this is a yes and. And that's why I appreciate this conversation, because what we're trying to do is allow you to solve it with the resources that are there and to maximize that. So I think I appreciate that opportunity for us. Representative Joachim?
Thank
Chair
you.
Chair Joachim, excuse me. I always got to remember you have that rule.
That's okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank all the testifiers, especially the students that came forward. It's really hard to share a personal experience like that in public, and I do really appreciate it, because we're here because of you. We need to focus on our students when we make decisions. Sometimes we get lost and focus on the system instead. And I really appreciate both the superintendent and principal that are here. We know we only filled about a third of a bucket. We're trying to, with indexing, get you around that corner, but it's going to take a little bit. And I do understand that the Safe School Levy money is not enough at $34 a pupil, especially when we just keep adding things you can use for it, like we did in 23 with cybersecurity. It's kind of like one of our bonding bills where there's more requests than money that's there. And I understand also wanting flexibility. I would like to see the flexibilities within the pots, though. I know the $40,000 minimum, I actually got that from the MREA, from Minnesota Rural Educators Association, because a lot of times up here we do formulas where we just look at per pupil amount, and that does not help you when you have a small amount of pupils. So we wanted to have that $40,000 minimum. And I know, I don't know if the bill's floating around yet, but talking about being able to use that to supplement an employee that you have to, from like part-time to full-time, or to braid it with other funding, because I know you guys have become experts in braiding funding, because you have to get that, you have to like look under the couch cushions sometimes. So having some ideas from you about how to make that funding and the student support personnel aid more flexible would be wonderful, because we really made that as a targeted tool to help our kids with their mental health, their physical health, and making sure that they were going to get what they need and to get more adults in the building. I'm really afraid, and I think that's what you're hearing from the counselors and the students and the social workers, the nurses, that if it does slide into that school safety levy, people are going to be having to make choices between beefing up cybersecurity, hardening a building, and then softening a building, which is the student support personnel aid, and getting more people there to kind of stop problems before they start. So actually, that was just my soliloquy. Sorry about that. I work in the schools during the interim as a paraprofessional, so I know where that's at. But what I actually had a question direct to the author. This was crafted by a large group of people and different organizations that don't always agree with each other. I was wondering if you had a chance to talk to any of them before you put this bill together, just to see what they thought.
Representative Lawrence.
Mr. Chair, Chair Yuki, I have not, you're correct, there's more than just me. I didn't draft it on my own, but I have not visited with the other educational organizations that I assume you're referring to that might add some input on it. However, in a lot of the testimony and visits that I've had prior to session, the message is the same from every superintendent I talk to, every school board member I talk to, every educational facility. They need the flexibility in the funds. The funds are locked up. In fact, I've had very few people come and say, we need more money. We know we're probably not going to get more money because of the budget forecast, but allow us flexibility in the dollars we have and allow us to stretch those dollars to go further. And so to answer your question, I've not spent any time in going to talk with those groups, but in the people that are in the trenches, I spent a lot of time talking with them. They need the flexibility in utilizing dollars better.
Chair Joaquin, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. The people that we're talking about are the school nurses, the counselors, the social workers, the psychologists. They're in the trenches too.
Mm-hmm.
And I would appreciate if you had a chance to sit down and talk with them as well, because everyone is worried about the choices people will make. If the $40,000 as a minimum doesn't work, well, then I'm just going to focus on this instead. And you heard from our students, and you heard from the people that are working with our students, that they really don't want that choice to be made. They want this money to stay focused. Mm-hmm. But I do appreciate you bringing it up, because we have to have all these conversations, because we have to be really looking down the line and what our budgets look like. And I ask the superintendent principal to please still keep coming to us with the needs you have, because I don't want anybody to think that we fully funded education in the last 2 years, because we didn't. So thank you.
Representative Vernon.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, you know, I'm really passionate about school nurses and critical infrastructure and roofs and things like that. So I love and hate this bill at the same time, because I think it's a both and. Like, we need funding for safe school revenue, and we need dedicated funding for student support personnel aid. So I have a question, and it's maybe more for Mr. Strom. If we added funding to the safe school revenue, just added funding to it, would we have to have, would it have a levy impact that you'd have to like sandpaper off later? Because I hear that a lot, right?
Mr. Strom, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vernick, it would depend. The Safe Schools program currently is a levy program, but there have been some bills in the past that have added an aid component to it. So it would depend on how one added that. If one wanted to make an equalized formula or otherwise change it so that the levy were flat, then one would also need to make a levy change as well. But some of the programs that have looked at safe schools have just simply added on top of the existing levy.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Erding, follow-up?
Sorry, yes, I do have a follow-up. So, Representative Lawrence, could you tell me, in the 2022, by chance, do you happen to know the answer, school culture and climate activities that pose the greatest challenge for principals? Do you know what that was?
And if you could direct your questions to the chair, but Representative Lawrence?
I'm sorry.
I'm not familiar with that. If it's a study, I have not seen it. I don't know if the superintendents are familiar with it, but personally, I have not seen that what you're referring to. I don't recall.
Representative Erding.
Thank you. Yes. So the principal survey said addressing staff mental health needs was the highest at 46%, and addressing student mental health needs was the highest at 37%. LSNs are required when you have 1,000 students or more, so we heard about the number of students. And we've heard from students both here today and in the student truancy and attendance study group that mental health, chronic disease management, and are important and key to student attendance. I think this is a both and. I think we need to put more money on the safe schools, but I really struggle that we would take funding away from dedicated resources with the student support personnel aid.
And thank you for the comments, Representative Vernig. We are starting to run into time. Representative Green, I'm gonna give you the last question before I go to Representative Joaquin for a close.
Great, thank you, Chair. I was going to bring one of the testifiers back up. Can I do that quickly?
Which testifier would you like to bring
up? I would like to bring up Hannah Hine, one of the students.
Yeah. Come on up.
And I promise we'll make this quick, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Representative Green, to your question.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for joining us again, Hannah. I echo what Representative Erding said. I have a love both and concerns with the bill. I do believe in some more flexibility, so I hear what the superintendents and the principals are saying. As a former school board member, I understand how important it is and the challenges that districts are facing financially. That said, one of the things that I think we're at the heart of a lot of this is the reliability piece with staff in the schools. Within here and the ability to move money around, my question for you, Hannah, is during the school day, take us through, like, how important is reliability, especially in that mental health space?
Yeah, absolutely. So those people and that infrastructure being there in order to support student needs is absolutely paramount to being able to just get through the school day, feel like you're being supported, and have success in school. So just knowing that those counselors are there for you and that there are social workers who are in the building and able to support your needs, I think, to answer your question, that's absolutely really important. So,
thank you. That's great. No, that and that's what I think I think we just have to make sure that we're not patchworking anything with in terms of mental health, which I think can happen when we start to split funds up. So thank you so much for answering my question, Hannah, and coming back up.
Thank you.
And that's it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Green, for being brief. And because you're brief, I can get one more in. Representative Ingen, then we're going to go to Representative Hill for the last comment. So Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lawrence. I think you're getting a really serious dialogue going, and I think that this is a great start. We heard from students. We heard from Superintendent Barton, who I think hit the nail on the head. We heard from our mental health advocates who are doing this critical work in the schools every single day. And all of the above are needed. I think we're relying on safe schools funding to partially address the multitude of necessary actions that comprehensively and holistically make up for a safe school. And instead of just operating under that same patchwork, we should be looking for creative ways to bring to fruition an all of the above approach and get everything done all the way instead of partially done across the board. So we need SROs, we need mental health, we need comprehensive security innovations in our schools, we need counselors at the ready to hear from a student in distress. And if we're kind of tinkering on the edges,
this is a great dialogue. This is a great opening to what could be a very beneficial and successful session in getting this stuff done. But we have to keep going. So I really appreciate you getting this started.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ingham. And before I go to Representative Hill, members, we're going to be on the House floor in an hour. Please continue this conversation there. For goodness sakes, this is fantastic. Representative Hill, would you like to make the final comments before we go to the bill author,
yes,
please?
Yes, thank you, Chair Krisha, and thank you for bringing the bill, Representative Lawrence. I really appreciate the dialogue, and to the Chair's point, looking forward to continuing it. I made some notes here to be brief, but I've seen the firsthand needs that our students are displaying in our schools daily. And at the secondary level, one of those needs that didn't get a lot of airtime here today is students that are experiencing chemical dependency. And in the latest data that I was able to access preparing for today, I noticed that in the latest year reported, 2019, there were more than 70 deaths attributed to opioid addiction in Minnesota alone among young adults and adolescents. And these deaths, as we all know, are often underreported. And so the value of having a known and trusted chemical dependency counselor on site is something that I think needs to be a part of this conversation in a very real way. And my question is, do you believe that this bill were passed, it would impact negatively the ability of schools to provide those opportunities for students to have a known entity on site to meet their needs should they experience chemical dependency?
And again, Representative Hill, through the chair, that's okay. Representative Lawrence.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, I really appreciate that question. And if I thought this was going to be a detriment to students, I would not have authored this bill. I do see this bill as a bill that opens doors to those services that are not being provided right now because the funding is froze and cannot be utilized, that the superintendent's school boards cannot utilize the funding because it's locked up in an area and provide those services. So I'm really glad you brought that question. I see this bill as opening doors that would provide more services in our districts. So thank you.
And if the two superintendents could come back up we've just got a couple minutes. Thank you, Superintendent Barton, and thank you, Superintendent Rudolph. Superintendent Rudolph, both of your comments were spot on. And Superintendent Rudolph, before I go to the bill author for final comments, one of the things that I really want to call out was you recognizing all the other testifiers. Too often in this committee, we don't become inclusive, and too often we allow outside groups to try to define the comments that are made here and the problems we're trying to solve. And what you did today was, I hope, reminded us all that we're all in this for the same reason, which is safe schools, good learning environment, student achievement, and we can go down the list of 50 things that you all became superintendents for. And so I wanted to make sure I acknowledge that and not go past that. If each of you would like to do a 30-second, then I'll turn to the bill author for the close.
Go ahead. First of all, thank you, Chair. And I think in schools and I think in our state and in our country right now, one of the things that we have lost the ability to do is sit at a table and listen to one another and find common ground. And this discussion is refreshing today because it is just that. It is lots of really good open discussion. And as we talk within our strategic plan with our students and how we prepare our students for the next steps in their lives, this is a critical part of that, learning how to come to a table and how to find that common ground, how to agree to disagree at times, and where to move forward and how to find a win for everybody. And so just want to take a moment and thank everybody in the room for the discussion.
Thank you. And you started us off, Superintendent Barton. Would you like to final comments before I go to the bill author?
Yeah, thank you. Just philosophically, you know, I think public education is the greatest example of freedom and democracy and what living in this great country is all about, right? I mean, everyone has, when they think about the United States of America, they think about the opportunity to achieve the American dream. And public education is the one place, this great equalizer, where every student that comes to us is different. There's lots of students that everyone has gifts and talents. Everyone has their different struggles, and there's the haves and the have-nots. And when they walk through our doors, we need to allow every single student and celebrate the fact that they're all different, but remove barriers for each one of them to have that opportunity to meet their potential as an individual and achieve their hopes and dreams in life. And there's a recipe and there's a formula for that to happen. Again, I started off as we are here for student learning, right? But there's prerequisites for student learning to occur. Just like every one of our students, you are all human beings, right? And if you were all bullied before you walked in this room, or you had some serious situation occur, or if you didn't have food to eat, or if you didn't have, if you had serious medical needs, it would be very difficult for you to come into this room today and operate effectively and give your full attention and focus to the topic at hand. And our students are no different. And we need to try and create the optimal conditions for learning where we have a positive climate and culture so that students can succeed. I appreciate all of your work. I appreciate the dialogue. I appreciate all of the different testifiers today. And we're all in this together, right? We are all in this together, and I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lawrence, your close.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you, Chair Carisha. Thank you to my colleagues, representatives in this room here. Thank you to all the testifiers, as was echoed earlier today. And I thank the gentleman to my right, to my left as well, for being here and testifying on this bill. And I want to thank Tim Strom for giving the introduction that he gave as far as starting out and gives the foundation on how to think about this bill. And just kind of as a recap, as I close, as a reminder, as was testified, this bill does not cut funding. It does make it more flexible for schools to offer students support. It does not remove the mandates that the bills were set to provide these services for, but it opens the doors to support the students better. I encourage you, I ask you to support House File 56 for the benefit of all our students in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
And with that, thank you, Representative Lawrence. The chair lays over House File 56 as amended, for possible inclusion into a later omnibus bill. Thank you to the testifiers. Thank you, and travel safely back. And with that, members, I'm going to bring Vice Chair Bakeberg up to take the gavel over as we cover the next bill and the next agenda item. So, Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Chair Carisha. While you get yourself situated, Chair Carisha moves that House File 780 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Chair Carisha, please present your bill.
Members, the bill in front of you is, what's the House File number again?
780.
House File 780 in front of you is a forecast bill, and I'm going to have Mr. Strom introduce the bill if I could.
Mr. Strom.
Chair Bakeberg, Representative Carisha, House File 780 is the annual forecast adjustment bill. What this bill does is take the appropriations that vary according to pupil estimates or cost estimates and modify them to fit the formula values that the new forecast would provide. Under current law, the programs that are in this, the 34 sections in this bill, are all programs where the legislature essentially has made a deal with the executive branch that the legislature agrees to fully fund each of these programs when it passes. And then if for some reason the amount for that program were to go up or down based on student counts, that adjustment is made and is included in the budget base. So if there were more pupils than expected in the state and a program costs more, the base budget would reflect that cost at zero over base. It would be built into the base. And by the same token, if there were fewer pupils counted for a program, that funding would go down automatically. There's no savings to base or no savings for the committee to spend elsewise. It simply adjusts to the new base level of funding. The November forecast had initial adjustments. As you can see from the bill, the appropriations are currently blank and will be reliant on the February forecast that comes out in a few weeks to fill in the actual amounts. Whether the amounts are up or down, unless there is an open and standing appropriation in statute, you need to physically pass a bill, even though those appropriations changes show at no cost over base. So it's important that a forecast bill passes each year, but in terms of the cost of that bill, in terms of your target, this bill neither costs more or less than the target because it essentially is the target.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Members, are there any questions for Chair Kreisha or Mr. Strom regarding the mechanics and the purpose of this forecast bill?
And Mr. Chair, if you could come back to me very quickly, I just have a couple comments.
I just have one question, Mr. Strom, if there's no questions from members. Seeing none. Mr. Strom, what happens if the legislature did not pass this forecast bill?
Chair Bakeberg, members, if the appropriation is not open and standing, which means otherwise existing law to take effect without legislative change, then if the program has too little money in it, there would be prorations to each recipient of that, usually school districts. If there were an excess in that amount, that would cancel to the general fund. There's a little bit of a reallocation process of excesses and deficiencies that we could get into perhaps at a different time. But essentially, if a program that's listed in the bill were to cost more according to the forecast estimate, if the bill isn't passed, that appropriation would remain at the old level and would be insufficient. So there would be proration of the amount by which that was insufficient.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Any questions from members on what Mr. Strom just said? We'll go to Chair Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, members, the bill, what you have in front of you here is a couple different things. And I challenge the committee, first of all, let's not make this the bill. If we can't come together and we can't figure some things out, this bill, I'm asking this committee to move it out, move it into Ways and Means, so that we have a bill parked there that A, could be a vehicle if we needed to. Those of us that have been through a couple terms know things can get a little bit challenging at the end. And if we run out of time, we're going to need a bill to put some agreements into. But the other thing that I've heard from all over the place is that if we can't come together, that we're just going to take the forecast stuff and move it forward. I challenge us, let's not make that the case. You've heard the previous discussion. Let's make the conversations substantive. Let's get us to a point where we can get through some of these difficult things. But the bill you have in front of you, I'm asking this committee to move out, is A, a vehicle bill, and it's B, a backup bill if we get to a point where there's no movement.
Thank you, Kurt. Chair Kreisha.
Not an easy job, is it?
Chair Joaquin.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I had to step out in the hall. Chair Kreisha is right. We like to put vehicle bills in different places, and thank you for putting it in Ways and Means. I think that's a good choice, and I think you and I have discussed some maybe LOR bills sitting in taxes. You've got one on the floor now, so you always have a plan A, B, C, D, E, F, G. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Joaquim. Chair Kreisha renews his motion that House File 780 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails, and House File 780 is re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All right, we'll move into presentation and discussion. Members, our last item on the agenda is a review of the nonprofit organizations that currently receive funding for fiscal years 2024 to 2025 and expected to be funding for this upcoming biennium for fiscal years 26 and 27. I will recognize nonpartisan staff to explain the nonprofit appropriation tracking sheet included in our folders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Solvay Beckel, House Fiscal. The spreadsheet is titled K through 12 Education Finance, Nonprofits Funded in K through 12 Education Budget. This should look fairly similar to spreadsheets we have gone over before. The first two shaded columns show the end of session forecast, and then the bulk of the columns show the November forecast. Items in the fiscal years 24 and 25 columns are what we'd refer to only, I should say, are what we refer to as one time. If they have zeros in fiscal years 26 and 27, except for a few exceptions, that means the funding is not ongoing. So the funding was appropriated for one biennium only. If there is a superscript next to the program name, then you can take a look at page 2 under notes, and if it has a 1 next to it, that means the appropriation is available until June 30th, 2026. So this appropriation has language in the bill saying that it's available past the original biennium in which it was allocated, despite not having ongoing appropriations exactly. Superscript 1, it's available till June 30th, 2026. Superscript 2, it's available until June 30th, 2027. But moving back to the first page, most of the nonprofits funded through the K through 12 education budget are funded through the Education Excellence article. You can see there are a number that just happened to be at the top. This is by alphabetical order, but they just happened to be one time. There's the Alliance of Chicanos, Hispanics, and Latin Americans. The Building Assets Reducing Risks Center, you can see that that one is available through June 30th, 2026. The Civic Education Grants, Girls Taking Action, Innovative Service Learning Grants, Junior Achievement North, Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs, Minnesota Alliance with Youth Promise Fellows, and then we have an ongoing item, the Minnesota Center for the Book. Then a one-time item, Minnesota Council on Economic Education, followed by some more ongoing items, the Minnesota Foundation for Student Organizations, which has a number of smaller appropriations within that, all for, as you might guess, a variety of different student organizations. Then the Minnesota Math Corps program, the Minnesota Principals Academy, a one-time appropriation for the Minnesota Youth Council, which is also led by the Minnesota Alliance with Youth, Museums and Education Centers. This one is also a larger umbrella term for a number of smaller museums throughout the state. The Online Music Instruction Grant, Recovery Program Grants, the Sane Foundation, Serve Minnesota, Starbase, and the Walkabouts Program. Then in the Teachers article, there is the Black Men Teach program, which is ongoing. The Closing Educational Opportunity Gaps Grant, which is one-time funding. The Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and Indigenous Teachers, which is ongoing. And then there are grants in the community education portion of the bill as well. The after-school program grants, those are available through June 30th, 2027. The neighborhood partnership grants, and then the regional neighborhood partnership grants, and those past two are a series of grants awarded to a variety of smaller grantees as well, as are a number of other items in this on this spreadsheet. So those are the nonprofit groups or larger appropriations funding nonprofit groups found in the larger K through 12 spreadsheet.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. Any members, any discussion, any questions? All right, Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair. And I did have, just for clarification purposes, for EPCs, I were often told they're under our nonprofits, and I just didn't see them listed here, and I didn't know if they were under a different part or if they're in a different spreadsheet or if they're in the in one of the subsets that I didn't that weren't listed here. And Chair, if she could just give me some clarification on where Education Partnership Coalition would be.
Ms. Beckel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mueller, Education Partnership Mr. Chair, Representative Mueller, I'm so sorry about that. So I believe those are the neighborhood partnership grants and the regional neighborhood partnership grants. They've had a few different names, I think, or maybe not a few. They have changed once since I have covered this area.
Thank you.
Representative Mueller, was that? Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions, and they should be simple enough that I could just ask them both at the same time. The first is, are these all administered by MDE, or are there other state agencies who are administering some of these? And then secondarily, were these all the result of direct appropriations, or is there a mix of competitive grants and single source grants?
Ms. Beckel, would you like to take that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Hudson. So the ones shown here are the ones administered by MDE. I don't believe there are any K through 12 education grants that are administered by the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, the Purpich School for Performing Arts, or the state academies, which are the other state agencies that are under the purview of this committee. So yes, MDE is the one who would be overseeing these grants. And yes, so some of these are direct grants. For example, Girls Taking Action, that's a direct grant to the grantee. It's just to Girls Taking Action. But some of the others, like I mentioned, let's see, a good example. Well, the Minnesota Foundation for Student Organizations, that's a larger source, but it is to specific smaller entities. And then there are some competitive ones, like, for example, the Innovative Service Learning Grants. That would be a more competitive grant program that MDE administers, the competition, so to speak.
Thank you, Representative Hudson. Thank you, Ms. Beckel. Any other members? Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Chair. Is anybody here from MDE that I could ask a question about? Oh, I should have known Mr. Ooney.
Mr. Ooney is here.
He is our steadfast.
Always here.
If you don't mind, Mr. Chair, I'd have a question for Mr. Ooney when he...
Mr. Ooney. Or, I'm sorry, Representative Bennett, go ahead.
Thank you. So, Mr. Ooney, I'm just wondering, as I'm looking at this list and I'm remembering legislation that passed a few years ago that directed any of these grant recipients to submit to MDE and also the chairs of the committees their goal that aligns with the workforce, you probably remember this, and then also submitting some data showing the effectiveness toward reaching that goal. I haven't seen anything on that. Is that getting into MDE? Has that information been given to MDE, or is it just not happening, or where are we at with that? Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, okay. Mr. Chair, Chair Bennett, yes, I do remember this. This is in 2021. I think this was a piece of legislation that you had led on with former Representative Dabney to have outcome reports on all grants that came in through the K through 12 jurisdiction. The reports, I can't remember the exact language, but I know the reports for sure are submitted to the chairs. I actually can't remember if they're submitted to us. But one thing that we did do is we worked pretty hard over the last, I think over like a year, year and a half, to create a template for all grantees that we put into our grant application materials. So we wanted to make sure that they were set up for success for being able to submit those too. I know that in that statute, there is not a requirement that MDE then take the reports and then send them to the legislature. Each grantee is required to, on their through their own processes, to send them into the chairs or to the legislative committees who have jurisdiction over those grants.
Thank you,
Representative Bennett.
Yep, thank you, and thank you, Mr. Ooney. And very good memory. One thing it did say was that information would get submitted to minority leads of the education committees. So it might be something, I guess, maybe my question is, whose job is it to hold them accountable? Is it us as chairs and minority leads, or MDE, or who oversees whether they're doing it or not? I haven't seen anything at all. I guess I don't know, but I think we shouldn't let that slip. So do you have any information on that, or is that something I should just dig into?
Mr. Ooney, and before you go, could you just state your name and who you're with for the record? Sorry. So.
Oh, my goodness. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Adosh Ooney. I am the Director of Government Relations for the Department of Education. I'm feeling very bashful right now. Chair Bennett, that is something I'll have to go back and check to our grants team in terms of what the specific language. I just don't want to misspeak in terms of the directions that we give them. My guess in terms of, I know, as I had mentioned before, there isn't a report or responsibility for MD to take them and then transmit them to the chairs. My understanding was the original conception was that the grantees themselves would also have some responsibility to the legislative committees themselves.
Representative Bennett.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Ooney. That is correct, and so it's something I think we should look into, and perhaps if a group, you know, comes to us, it's like, where's your information? Because the whole intent of that legislation, which did pass bipartisanly, I appreciate that very much, was to make sure that what we're funding is actually working and working toward goals that are part of academics, attendance, that kind of thing. So something we need to look into, and if maybe you could check in on your end too, Mr. Ooney, and then we'll kind of go from there as to how we should handle it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Bennett. Representative Sensenbrenner.
Thank you. This is just a quick question. It's a little bit of a follow-up to Representative, and it's actually for MDE. So I'm just wondering if it would be possible for us to get a list of the, when we do the competitive grants, to see a list of who was awarded those grants and how much. And I'm also wondering, like, specifically for the after-school grant, which I know was a large amount, and it was, if I'm remembering correctly, kind of like there was various rounds for it. I think what I'm interested in is like how much funding is left in that grant kind of bucket, kind of where are we in the process of dispersing those funds and how much is left. So I'm wondering, Mr. Chair, if it would be possible to get a list of that from the department moving forward.
Mr. Uni?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sensenmayer, I can certainly connect with our grants team and our program areas to get the awards for those that have gone out. Some that come to mind are full service community schools that have gone out. I know that we have just closed our recent grant process for a couple other ones. Some are out. I just don't have them all memorized. But yes, we can certainly look into which have been awarded and which are out. And there are various ones that we put releases out for, so we can look at those as well. But we'll go back and take a look. And I can work with staff in terms of ascertaining the full list. That would be helpful for the committee.
Representative Sensenmayer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one quick follow-up. I would also just love to know if of the non-competitive grants of the direct appropriations, which have gone out and which haven't. I know that there have been some issues that I've heard about from grantees about not getting funding. And so just kind of would love to know where we're at in the process of getting all of these direct appropriations out. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to say thank you to Ms. Beckel for the list. These are all grants, but not all grants are equal. So when we did the Bar Center grant, that was actually under the governor's MTSS and READ Act. Let's see. Serve Minnesota is actually an organization. It's a private-public partnership and a contract with the state to help, and Math Corps and Reading Corps underneath that, so that's a little different. And then the Minnesota Youth Council, we finally gave them money, even though we required them by statute to exist, we never funded them. So those are a few different things on there. And then, Mr. Chair, whenever you're ready, I'd love to just do a quick closing comment.
Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to thank Chair Krisha and the team for trying to help with remote testing. That was the one thing when we got into this room in 2023 that I was very excited about, because we could hear from voices all across the state, not just students and teachers, but all the folks that work in our school. And it's important to have that centered when we make our decisions. And I know sometimes people look at lobbyists as outside groups coming in, but those are the groups that are here to speak for those voices, because our schools have such a workforce shortage. You don't want us pulling the teachers and the counselors and the superintendents and principals and everybody else in the building if we can help it. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Chair Krisha, good to see you there.
Thank you. So I'm assuming we're about to go to adjournment. So just a couple of comments before. So thank you, Chair Joachim. And a couple comments as we're a finance committee, and as we look at the information in these grants, I want to set the stage properly. I mean, over my tenure, over all those that have been here as well, grants are an opportunity to try to raise ideas up, and sometimes they fall down. Sometimes they go well. It's just what we do. But we are in a new situation. We are in audit territory, very much like you might audit your books for an accounts receivable. And we just have to ask the question. And so, you know, if I ever imprecisely speak, and I don't think you intended to do this, but I'll make sure I get it right. When I talk about outside groups, I generally talk about the paid folks. You know, we have a lot of voices that we want. We want to listen to all the voices and just make sure that they're all inclusive. The other thing is, I just thought I would give a committee a quick heads up on next week. So we have two committee hearings, still trying to figure out exactly which bills may come through those. So stay tuned. We're not trying to hold any information back. We're just trying to see what moves through and how everything shakes. And finally, a great week. And I just really want to thank the committee members for getting us through a couple days of some testimony. We're going to have a lot in front of us. So. And I hope you're finding out, if you talk on the House floor, we don't have to talk as much in committee.
Should we talk in committee now?
But my thanks to the committee, and my thanks to Representative Bakeberg for Vice Chair Bakeberg for falling in as chair.
Thank you. And members, that concludes the agenda for today. Our next meeting, as Chair Krisha said, is Tuesday, February 25th, 2025. Thank you all, and the committee stands adjourned.